Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, third hour here on the show. It's the Tiki and Tierney Show. What's going on? Hopefully everybody's enjoying their Thursdays. We come to you from our studios here, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. We'll get back to the NFL. Maurice Jones-Drew will join us coming up next segment of the NFL Network. Former running back, Jaguars, spent a minute with the Raiders as well. Talk some draft stuff, some offseason stuff. You know, it really is odd. While Tegan and I discussed this yesterday, if there's ever any event pertaining to golf, as we do a little master stuff here, that you know doesn't necessarily need star power, it really the Masters is the only one that provides that because the course and the backdrop and the history, it kind of provides itself. And, you know, I love the fact, even though there's a rotational basis, U.S. Opens and PGA Championships and Open Championships, they play on many of the same tracks, you know. But there's just something special about every single year, the same exact course. You grow old with the course, literally. As we age, the course adds character and adds years. And, you know, but as I'm watching here today, and I'm not one of these guys who needs Tiger Woods. I love when Tiger's playing. A lot of people need Tiger, otherwise they're not interested. And I get that. I certainly understand that fringe fan type of existence and what you crave from Tiger. I get it. And I'm not talking down to you. I don't happen to need that because I love golf and Tiki loves the Masters as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is another reinforcement. You know, who knows? I mean,
yeah.
May have seen him take his last swing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because we don't know. Listening to Noda yesterday, Begay, who we talked to a little bit about Tiger. You can find it on Odyssey.com. Just search for Tiki and Tierney. It's interesting. I didn't think about like how damaged he was in that car crash, Tiger Woods. Obviously, we were worried about whether or not he survived when it first happened, and we knew that he was in intensive care. But, you know, very short order, he went home, right? Remember we heard
yes.
the news that he was going back home, he was going to rehab back down in Florida, and it was like, okay, he's going to be okay. And, you know, it's unfortunate people get in accidents all the time, but they recover. But listening to Noda, it made me realize how, like, banged up he was with the fractured femur, right? And, you know, a bunch of other injuries to his ankle and things of that nature. Noda mentioned that he's just thinking about, like, walking, not playing golf again. And so it kind of put it in perspective in a way that I hadn't really thought about until we chatted with Noda yesterday. So you're right, BT, you do miss him. And the reason I think you miss Tiger on days like this, the beginning of the Masters tournament, is because, yeah, there were some lean years there and here and there, but Tiger was always, seemed like he was always ready for this stage. And the one eye, you could always keep one eye on Tiger Woods because you never knew it was going to happen. I think that is missing in a sense, right? There's not a player that I got to keep an eye on this guy because something great might happen. I don't think we have that right now.
Well, I got to tell you, for me, that and now it's not the same level because it's not a minority. It's not, 20 plus years ago who's changing the entire trajectory of the sport. But Bryson DeChambeau, to me, I mean, Teague, and I wasn't really feeling him. If you remember, I was pretty critical.
Yeah.
During, I think that was the Rocket Mortgage event in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he was barking at the cameraman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bothered me. And he just came across a little petulant. There was something else where, I think it was the other tournament where one or two after that, where he was out of bounds and he was really ornery, like, no, I deserve the drop here. No, the guy's a rules official. He's telling you where you have to drop. I mean, I understand that you like to have everything down to an exact yard or degree. I respect that. But the guy's job is to know the rules, and you're basically telling him he doesn't know his job, which I thought was disrespectful. However, the more I've watched Bryson and, you know, interact post-round on camera, whether it's with Amanda on CBS or other, you know, other outlets, Golf Channel, NBC, they have events. He seems to be a really caring person with a big heart and obviously a monster driver. And as much as Tiger Woods, nobody will ever replicate or come close. Nobody will be able to Nobody will change the. As I say that, I'm thinking in the back of my brain.
Yeah, eventually someone will.
Well,
right?
Is that somebody Bryson DeChambeau? Think about what he's doing off the tee already.
Yeah, but here's the thing: Bryson is unique in how he's approaching this. So let's if you drop back to Tiger Woods in the late '90s when he blistered this Masters tournament, and set that course record that Noda also told us about. You looked at Tiger and it was like, man, he's an athlete, right? This dude looks like he's got physique and he looks fit and strong. And then he only got stronger as the years went on. And that in itself also changed golf, right? You used to see golfers that were just heavy and, you know, out of shape. You an athlete? Nah, just hit a golf ball. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like, even Phil got in great shape, right?
They did.
Right? You just saw, like, people trying to get physically fit to play the game of golf. And it changed it in a lot of ways. It's why, you know, on par, no pun intended there, they started hitting the ball longer because they were just in better shape, right? And now you look at what Bryson is doing. Bryson is doing something that people can't replicate, right? Which is change your physique and become a football player, essentially, playing golf. And some players have, right? You look at, you know, what we talked about with Jordan Spieth, trying to get longer and, speed up his swing speed and his launch angle and all these things to add some distance. It didn't work. He's going back to what got him to where he is, and he's playing much better golf, winning last week at the Valero Open, as we talked about. Same thing could be said about Rory McIlroy. Like Rory talked about, I see what Bryson's doing. I want to try to, you know, get some strength and speed. He shot four over today, right? I think Bryson is doing things that aren't as easily replicable as what Tiger did for the golf world at large.
I don't know if I agree with that, and let me tell you why. I'm going to pull in an example from somebody we had a conversation with about 5 weeks ago, Burt mm-hmm. Blyleff in the Hall of Fame pitcher. Remember we had Burt on?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Now, Burt was took him a while to get. I think it was 284 wins, I think is where 284, 287, but generally thought to have it maybe the best curveball of all time. Mm-hmm. Like his fastball was good. His curveball historically is put in that rarefied space. Like maybe really the best curve of all time. So Burt, I believe he broke in, I want to say the early 70s, right? So Burt Blylevin's throwing this nasty deuce. He's not chasing RPMs. He's not looking at revolutions. He's not looking at spin rate. He's just gripping the seams, and naturally, the torque in his wrist, the way he cocks his wrist, and then obviously, you know, the way you pull down a lampshade almost is how you replicate a curveball. You know, what he's doing is he's going on feel. He's not visually seeing any numbers spitting back at him. And I say that because now, while even Jack and Gary Player, who hit the, you know, one of the honorary shots today, these guys would go on the range, and they had swing coaches, I'm sure, but they weren't chasing numbers, Tiki. They weren't looking at, oh, my swing speed was this, my ball speed was 190. They were going by feel, and they were going by, you know, yeah, they were being an athlete, even though back then golfers weren't athletes like they are now, but it was just the mechanics of the game. And as long as there's something visible to chase, like an RPM, if you're trying to get revolutions on a baseball, or if you're trying to crank it 350 on a fly, and the mathematical equation says if I get my ball speed up to 190, then this is going to have a chance in benign weather conditions, no wind, to go 350 on a fly. I'm telling you, a whole new generation of players is going to do this.
Yeah.
So I say that. I know that was long-winded, but I actually think that in terms of changing the way the game is played, this is going to sound insane. But I think that Bryson DeChambeau actually has a chance to do more for that than Tiger Woods. And I'm not talking about race and that stuff. I'm not talking about that.
No, you're talking about just fit, like the physicality.
How you play the game, how you attack a golf course.
Yeah, because
yes.
Look, at some point they can't they can't lengthen golf courses much longer, much further, right? It's just or farther. They can't lengthen them much farther. It just doesn't make sense or logistical sense.
That's the thing. There's no land.
You just can't do it, and so. That's why we've heard so much talk about the ball deadening and things like that to slow these guys down. But I think, it's interesting seeing these guys trying to chase length and, get closer approach shots so you're hitting wedges so you can throw them at pins. To me, the difference is how do you set up your greens? Like, make them smaller. Make them even more tilted. Like, make that side hard if these guys are going to keep pushing closer and closer. To the finishing point off the tee than they have in previous iterations of the game. Like, I actually love the fact that Bryson tries to drive these short par fours. I love it. You know what I mean? Because it makes it feel like how I would play. You know what I mean?
If
think of the white tees. And like, these guys play from the tips or all the way back at the black. So, a par four is for them
460, 470. Yeah.
Right? You move up to the white tees. It's like 390.
370, 390. Yeah, 90. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what? Let me swing this thing as hard as I can, see if I can get a wedge in here. You know what I mean?
Oh, trust me, I know.
Right? That. So it almost, like, I think that's why I appreciate Bryson, because he's playing like an amateur does, except he's playing it from the tips, which is just, it seems impossible.
Well, it's funny too, because I was, when he first burst on the scene, because when he first burst on the scene, we knew he was unconventional in the sense that every stick is the same length, etc. But we didn't quite know how possessed he was with, with distance. We didn't know that. We just thought he was a very, very cerebral player who calculated quite a bit and didn't get in his own way. Now, at first, when he first started showing this length, I didn't love it because I don't love seeing drive wedge. I don't, because that takes away so much of the game. I mean, it's fun for us, but in terms of, I'm saying, not playing, watching, I like seeing guys hit, not six irons into greens on a par four, but eight irons, at this point. I just like that. And if you want to make the greens more punitive, you want to tighten them up, that's fine. I'm all around the collar, make it a little thicker, that's fine. Pinch the fairways, that's fine. But the problem is, even if golf went through this incredible, undertaking of we are going to lengthen every course, you know who would be negatively impacted?
Who's that?
Us, the hacks.
Yeah, it's true.
We'd start to hate it. We'd love watching it. We hate it because, really, bogey is par, if you think about it, on a longer, like, if I play, and I've played, and I know you have too, we've all played nice courses, I've played par fours that have touched 460, 470. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, if I bogey, that's kind of like a par for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not getting home in two real. I mean, I might be greenside if I'm lucky.
It's not even worth trying.
Well, I'm going to try, but you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to do it.
True.
So I don't know. I think that the danger, and I think this impacted Jordan Spieth a little bit, who's playing relatively, although he just got a seven before.
Birdie seven, birdie.
Oh, he came back with a birdie?
Yeah.
Oh, that's seven, huge. Birdie. That tells you where he is right now. That mentally, he's great. And that's an unlucky seven because he hit a tree and it went backwards, as I chronicled before. But he was kind of chasing speed a little bit. And you can chase speed all you want. Remember, there's still a timing mechanism. Mm-hmm. So all these guys, not all of them, because somebody like maybe Hoffman, who's a good player, might not have the physical prowess of a DeChambeau. Theoretically, most of these guys can chase 350 on a fly. They can chase it all they want. And some of these guys can even do it. But are they going to maintain their precision required to win at this level? And that's where it gets dicey. And DeChambeau's the only guy who's figured that out so far.
No, you're right. He for whatever reason, and I think it's because he committed to the physical side of it. I think that's the other side. That's the piece that's missing. Maybe that's what I'm referring to. I don't see Rory putting on 20 pounds of muscle. You know what I mean? I don't see Jordan or any of these other guys putting on that much muscle to help accomplish their goal of chasing distance.
Whereas
Bryson, I'm sure he did it in a healthy way. I'm just saying that because I just want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
For sure.
But, dude, man, you're putting on that much weight that quickly, that you can't have done it in a healthy way.
Well, you played with him. How tall is he?
He's my 6'3".
He's no way.
He's probably about 2 inches taller than me. He's probably 6 feet tall.
I see. Six, how tall is Bryson? And, by the way, I'm talking about lengthy par fours. the 11th hole today, par 4, 505 yards.
Listed at 6'1".
Yeah.
Now he's 230. Oh, 235. Man. When I played with him, he was like maybe 200.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, sustainability is another thing. All the torques on the knees and the ligaments, things get stretched out as you get into your 30s. We'll see if it works. But he's a blast to watch, and he's having kind of an up-and-down day. Justin Rose, -4. Harman, he's an American. He's -3. Matsuyama from Japan is -3. DeChambeau is +4, and right now tied for 63rd. So we're obviously keeping an eye on the Masters. But coming up next, week, we'll get back to football, and we'll chat with Maurice Jones-Drew, NFL Network analyst, former running back, some of the offseason occurrences, what he thinks about the draft, and maybe what he thinks about Deshaun Watson, what might happen there. We'll talk to Maurice Jones-Drew. That's next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Tiki and Tierney here. Just want to remind you again, this weekend coming up on CBS, the big events continue. The best golfers in the world are in Augusta National, trying to win the coveted green jacket, a tradition unlike any other. The Masters covered Saturday, 3 Eastern, and continues on Sunday at 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific, only on CBS. Serious question, Teak, before we get to our guest. If you and I played from the tips, which is where they're playing, obviously,
yeah,
right now, what would we shoot? I think I might shoot a 140.
I would say at least 130.
Oh, that's a given, because you know how many times we're going to four-putt those greens?
Yeah, I'm looking at how these guys are landing on these greens, like hitting them in the middle of the green, and they're trickling all the way off the back.
Yeah.
Some of them right into the trap, which is another two shots. Yeah, I'm going to say I might go 150.
I might be with you. They better have some good car girl action. That's one thing I know that better be going on around the course that day if that ever happens. All right, Deke. And a lot of extra balls, because I could lose 20 of them there. Maurice Jones-Drew, NFL Network analyst, really good running back in the day. Jaguars, minute with the Raiders as well. He's into fantasy, loves his football, and MJD is back with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. What up, Mo? How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, guys. See, you guys don't know how to play the course. You got it. Like, I have this other wedge that I keep in my bag called the pencil wedge.
Okay.
I don't go over 90. 90 is the goal. Oh, that's
nice.
That's the highest I'll shoot.
And wait, let me guess. It has an eraser on it too, right?
Oh, it has it all. It comes with everything.
Well, Maurice, but I got this one thing called it's the dash, and I'm renowned for this with my buddies. That's when they don't see me for about 8 minutes, which means I'm on the opposite side of where I should be. And somebody yells, "Yo, B, what'd you get?" And I just yell, "Dash."
That's fine. You know, like I said, I make sure that, you know, those double bogeys turn into a bogey or a par, depending on, you know, if it's a sandy par. You know, you just never know. The ball may just roll out of the woods onto the green sometimes. You just never know.
Yeah, right. MJD, you can follow him on @MJD on Twitter. And I'm looking at it right now. Why are you clowning our boy, Mac Jones, man? With the body. He's got the cigar, the body.
I'm just saying, man, like, it's crazy to me that you know, Alabama strength coach gets paid $1 million and Mac Jones' body looks like this. What are we doing?
And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, Vic Tafur posted this photo. Only 3 more weeks of the draft. Mac Jones has a shirt off with a cigar in hand, and he's got a dad body, man.
It's terrible. It really is. It's a bad body, dude.
Yes, but so did Tom Brady. What do you think about Mac Jones? Forget, like, like his acumen as a college football player, national champion, all that. But like as a pro, where should he be drafted? Because I think he can be a good pro. But the question or the debate that BT and I are having, in a sense, is where should he be drafted?
Well, I think again, when you're talking quarterbacks, teams are going to move up to go get him, especially those top 5 guys. He's one of those guys. I just did a mock draft, so I don't want to give too much up. But I think he needs to go to a system that's going to be able to utilize his talent and his ability. I think when you're at the University of Alabama and you have the best blocking and you win, what I do love about him is that he's a competitor, but I do have concerns, because when you watch a lot of his throws, guys are running wide open.
That's what I was saying.
So you want to make sure wherever he goes, he gets to sit a year. Most of these guys need to sit a year and then learn the game, similar to Patrick Mahomes, and then come back out and play. Right, and it's okay for that to happen. We forget Aaron Rodgers sat 3 years.
That's true.
He's still one of the. We forget Tom Brady sat a year, right? But all these guys that played right away, they have good careers, but they never become the winners that we expect them to, because they're learning on the fly. And you have some flaws when you're if you're not able to protect the quarterback, you're not able to understand the system where the ball goes. There's going to be different coverages. The college game is completely different than the NFL. So it's a lot that goes into it. And being from Jacksonville and seeing, you know, knowing he's from Mandarin and he's from that area, he definitely has the ability to go out there. I just think that, like most of these quarterbacks, they need to sit before they get out there and get to throwing the ball.
We're talking to Maurice Jones-Drew, and Maurice with us here, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. What is your anticipation? Not what they'll do with the first pick, because they're obviously taking Trevor Lawrence, but how soon before Urban Meyer gets this thing cranked up fast and they're humming and they're winning? Is that your immediate or relatively immediate expectation?
I think you're going to give Urban 2 to 3 years. I think every coach should get that. From my understanding, it's completely different in the building when I talk to people there. It's just a different energy, different excitement. Guys are around. That's important. I've talked to a couple of coaches. One I played with in high school in Tashi Poy, their defensive line coach. Another, their assistant running back coach I grew up with in Quinton Ganther. So I have ties there. And obviously the people in the building when I was there, they're still there. But it's just a different energy there with him. And he demands success. And he demands it at a different level than other people. And when you're successful everywhere you go, like he was successful at Utah, Florida, Ohio State, when those guys come in, it's not a, man, how should we do this? You know what he's trying to get you to do because you've seen those products, the products on the field that he's put out, the guys that he's put out from college to the NFL. So I'm excited. I think, you know, you want to give him 2 to 3 years because they need to get a couple draft classes under their belt. You need to get another free agency under your belt. And then you kind of go from there. But I think 2 to 3 years, the Jags should be rolling.
Yeah, no, I believe in Urban Meyer, mainly because he's just telling it like it is. Like the whole free agency thing, I thought that was awesome. You know, I don't even get to see the guy. I don't get to have a conversation with him. We got to sign him to whatever, millions of dollars. It doesn't make any damn sense. And he's right. You do some color analysts for the Rams, and they are in an interesting spot because they have been for the last really 3 years. Like, we're trying to win this thing, man. We're going all in. We're spending money. We're going to bring in Ndamukong Suh and then Jalen Ramsey and then all these different guys. You know, Todd Gurley was there for a little bit. They make this massive trade, and we all know bringing Matthew Stafford in, sending Jared Goff out. What is the ultimate impact of that? Not from a – we know he's a better quarterback, but, I mean, does this get them over the hump?
You would think so. I think the Rams believe that they're a couple players away from going to the Super Bowl and winning it. I felt like when they went a couple years ago, they felt like they had the opportunity there. Cooper Kupp was hurt. New England came out with a great game plan to kind of stifle Jared Goff. They stifled their running game, and it was kind of like, all right, how do we get better from there? And so the Rams decided to go in a different direction, but they always want to win. That's what I respect about Sean McVay and this organization is – they're not in the rebuilding. He doesn't believe in rebuilding. He believes in win now. And as a player, that's what you want. You want to win now. And so, you know, if you go out there and you produce, they're going to pay you. I mean, they paid both receivers. They paid Todd. They paid Jared if you produce early. But also with that production and then getting paid is comes high expectation. So if you don't continue to play that way, guess what? We're going to have to find a way to move on from you and get something in return. I think that's what you want as a player. At least that's what I wanted as a player. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be in a situation where I can control my own destiny. If that's me balling out and I'm getting paid, awesome, all day. I'll take that every day of the week because I believe in my abilities. And so Sean does a great job with that. But you have to understand this, and I've said this a bunch of times. The Matthew Stafford is it's an effect of Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur goes to Green Bay. And let's remember, he ran that system in Tennessee, and it didn't work out too well. He gets a job in Green Bay, and all of a sudden that system is putting up 37 to 40 points a game. And it's because he has Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. And so all of a sudden you're seeing everyone like, oh, hold on. Is that what this system can look like with the all-star quarterback? Well, the Rams are like, look, let's go try to get Stafford. I know a couple of the teams try to go trade for him as well. We need to try to go get a guy with an arm talent that can, you know, make all the throws and do all the different things that's seen a bunch of coverages and can go out there and get us over the hump. The Niners, they make that big trade to get up to, you know, number three, right? Because they're trying to figure out a way to go get this arm talent. You're hearing Zach Wilson to the Jets because of the arm talent. And people that believe in that system, they see what it's like to have a quarterback that can make all these different crazy throws and all these different things. They're going for it. And so you're going to see more teams that are going to run this Mike Shanahan West Coast system, outside zone, play action pass system with top quarterbacks. That's what they're going to try to go and get. Before, it was just kind of like you get a tier two guy and you can make a run at it. But now they're going after the top guys because they see what it looks like with the Green Bay Packers.
So we're talking to Maurice Jones-Drew, three Pro Bowls, three-time first-team All-Pro as well, and he's part of the NFL Network, 9 years in the league. So I saw you tweeted, is Sam Darnold better than Teddy? And I know when I ask a question on social media, I have in my mind an answer. So when you wrote that and asked for responses, what was in your mind? You think Sam's better than Teddy?
I think from a business standpoint, that's a great move. I think from a playing standpoint, I don't know. Sam Darnold, and I've said this because being in California, I coached at my old high school, De La Salle. I saw Sam play in high school, saw him play at the University of Southern California. He turned the ball over in high school. He turned the ball over at SC. He turned the ball over for the Jets. That's just what he does. He's a guy that's going to take chances, and majority of the time, the ball ends up in the defense's hands. And so if you expect to win, the one thing you can't do is turn the ball over. And we've seen that with the Giants. We saw that with the Jets last year. You can't have a quarterback that's going to turn the ball over at a high rate. You can't win that way. And so I get it from a money standpoint because he's on that rookie deal. You can get him. You see what's going on. Maybe you like him. You don't. Maybe you're not satisfied with what Teddy Bridgewater is able to bring. But the thing about Teddy Bridgewater, he didn't turn the ball over. Right? You had a young defense out there, was a first-year play caller. They had a lot going on for the Panthers, and yet they still didn't turn the ball. They played well at times, but you're going to have those bumps and bruises. I just felt like the Panthers kind of – there was rumor that they were trying to get up in those first couple picks. They just couldn't get up there. And so for me, it's kind of like, you know, is he better? Is it like on the football field, is he going to play better? Right? Is he going to put up all these points?
Yeah.
Because when you watch him with the Jets, and I know he played with Adam Gase, and I know that's a whole another story we can get into. But even at USC, 9 out of 10 times he would turn the ball over in the first half, and then the second half he'd make all these miraculous throws to get him back in the game. You can't do that in the NFL.
Nah.
That doesn't work in the league. And so to me it's just like unless you can fix his turnover situation, it's gonna be kind of. You're in the same boat again.
Gotcha.
Maybe even worse.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one to watch, that's for sure.
Good information, man. You're on top of it. You ready for the draft? We're ready. Hopefully we'll get you back on pretty soon. Maurice Jones-Drew, thanks for stopping by, buddy. Appreciate it.
No problem, guys.
Appreciate you, brother.
There you go, man. Good player. He had a couple sick years. He was the first guy. I think I mentioned this last time we had him. Maybe the time before that. He was the first player, to my knowledge, that actually acknowledged –
Playing fantasy.
Because yeah. I remember he knelt down at the one, and for some reason, I think it was against the Jets. And I remember he's like, I don't give a damn about your fantasy team. I don't care if you win or lose. He's like, I got to do what I got to do for the team.
Yeah.
He was the, and now a lot of players have kind of taken on that mindset. But this was a while ago. Okay, we shall see. But he was good there. And not a great report on Darnold for somebody who saw him play in high school, college, obviously the pros.
It's just the facts. And if it's just like Jameis, Daniel Jones, any of these young quarterbacks, you just can't turn the football over.
But he said he was doing it in high school. I didn't know he was doing it in high school.
Well, Jameis was that way also.
Yeah.
And it just follows you. You are a certain way. And you hope that you can coach out of that. But, I mean, how much can you coach out of someone who just takes unnecessary risk and puts the ball in jeopardy? That's just bad.
That's probably the greatest challenge in quarterback coaching.
I think you're absolutely right, BT.
All right, we shall see. Teak, let's get the update. Axe on top of that. Coming up, Russ did it again. Russ Westbrook did it again. Is the triple-double king just a stat compiler? We'll hit it in the blast next after Ack right now. All right, Teak and Tierney. So, Teak, what are the Mets selling now at Citi Field? What did you just tweet, Darren Revelle? What is that concoction that they're selling?
It doesn't matter what the concoction is. They're selling these signature Mets mugs, and they have margaritas in them and something else. But I mean, it's not even about the beverage. It's about if I get it signed and then I take a picture of it, can I turn it into an NFT? You know, Darren Revelle is the master of all things business and sports. And so NFTs, which are non-fungible tokens, these things that are driving NBA Top Shot they're going crazy. Tom Brady just started an NFT adventure. I don't know if it's a company or if he's just putting out his own. Gronk Gronkowski did it with some of his best Super Bowl moments, and they immediately auctioned it over $1.6 million. It just feels like monopoly money when I hear the numbers that get thrown out for these non-fungible tokens, which is a picture of something else that you don't actually own. You just own the rights of the doctored picture. That's it.
Yeah, that's not going to really do it for me. I'm not saying I can't make a buck on it, but that does not seem...
I just don't get it. I'm half joking. Killing. I'm half joking with Darren Revelle, who's a buddy of mine. He lives in town here out in Forum Park. If I got one of those mugs and I got someone to sign it and took a picture of that signature, how much would it be worth? Type of thing.
Nice. Let's get a picture of what can we net our the stock photos Tiki and Tierney took 8 years ago.
That's right.
That haven't been updated.
They're right.
What can we get on that?
Yeah, because we wear ties, and well, I do actually, but not like that.
Well, I have a tie in that picture.
I know. I'm saying that's just not our
style.
It's not our style.
Not our style. It's also 8 years ago. We look a little different.
That's true.
I'm a little thinner.
No hair.
Yeah, no, still no hair. I'm a little thinner. And you kind of look the same.
Yeah.
Maybe a little thinner, too.
Yeah.
Just like going.
Oh, definitely a little thinner because I lost 20 pounds from running and stuff. So.
Did you run today?
I did not. I lifted weights today. Dude.
You lifted?
I didn't know how much I could still bench press.
Let me throw out a number.
Go ahead.
Do you go for reps or you go for pop?
So I started with reps.
But I'm going
to
say
but then a couple. Then a couple of days ago, I was like, let me just see what I can get to.
Okay. I'm going to say that you start, I think you'd start with a 45 on each side and then another 25 on each side.
Yeah. So that's just warming up.
Just warming up. I think that you max out. Max out. You're a pro athlete.
Just one rep.
One. Can you get 350 up?
No, not quite.
Okay. Almost?
I got 285.
Okay.
And I haven't tried that in years.
It hurts my ligaments hearing that.
I was shocked that I was able to push it.
Did it feel natural?
It not really. It was kind of like a struggle. Like you're lifting one shoulder, like, oh, you got to get this one up. And I have I don't have a spotter, but I have a bar that's right above my chest. So if it fell,
I got that too.
It wouldn't hit me.
Yep.
But I was surprised.
Not bad. Approaching three bills.
I got to start getting strong again.
Vane Tiki, here we go. It's almost summertime.
That's right.
It's almost time for the banana hammock.
Beach workout, banana hammock.
All right, you ready for the blast? See what we got?
Yeah, let's go.
Come on!
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right. If I can just pop it up. For some reason, the computer is not cooperating. Cooperating. Here we go. Blast. Okay. I got it right about now. Here we go, Tiki. So, I saw this earlier. Bengals have never had a ring of honor. That is until yesterday. Paul Brown and Anthony Munoz, the inaugural members, and fans will get to select two more. Which two other players should be in the Bengals ring of honor?
Oh, this is easy. Boomer. Boomer.
More accolades for Boomer. Come on.
Yeah, Boomer.
Does he really need more accolades, that guy?
And I'm going to say A.J. Green.
A.J. Green, interesting one.
I mean, he put in a decade, man. And he missed a lot of time. I'm going to say A.J. Green, yeah.
I'm going to actually say Marvin Lewis. I'm going to say Marvin Lewis before, no disrespect.
Boomer
was really good.
Yeah, he did. He won an MVP. So Boomer's got to be there. You're right.
AJ will eventually be there.
Forget AJ. Marvin Lewis is. You're absolutely right, dude.
I know 0-8 in the playoffs, but you just got there with a team that was nowhere near it. Up there.
Yeah, he changed that program.
Changed the culture. There you go. All right, Chiefs wideout DeMarcus Robinson was a guest of Good Morning Football, and he revealed some personal goals heading into next season.
Every other season is 5 touchdowns, 500 yards, and I just think it picks up a little bit more right now. And I'm looking for that opportunity, not for them to give me the opportunity, that role, but me to go in there and take the opportunity and go in there and show that I am a guy who can put up 1,000 yards a year and 10 touchdowns, and I'm ready to make that happen, so... They said they got something in store for me. I'm ready to show
I like it. Identifying benchmarks. That's a confident young athlete. Over 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. All right. It's out there. Do we believe the Chiefs offense will take a step forward, backwards, or stay the same?
No, I think they'll get better because they got some young players like DeMarcus Robinson. He's only, let's see, wait, was he? No, he's not even that young anymore. This is going in his fifth year. He was a late round selection, so he's still trying to prove himself. And they still got the best offensive weapons in football. I think they're going to continue to get innovative. Like we've seen them run up against some challenges, BT. Like you saw it last year where they had some just average offensive output games. They were still winning those games, so it didn't matter. But I think they know that people have caught up, and I expect some innovation, so better.
You know what? I mean, I think it would be a disservice to say that it won't be. To say that it's going to be worse is just completely underrating the mind of Andy Reid.
Yeah, and the talent of Pat Mahomes.
As I was going to say, and the talent of Patrick Mahomes. So they'll adapt, they'll adjust, they'll tweak, they'll modify, and they'll just, you know, continue to put points up as teams make adjustments to them. So definitely not backwards. Maybe not necessarily a step forward. But I would, you know, if you stay the same, you're still an elite offense, and that's the starting point, is an elite offense. So
yeah.
I'll stay the same with a possibility to actually step forward. The Spurs in danger of missing the playoffs for consecutive years for the first time in franchise history. I didn't even realize that. Wow. After losing to the Nuggets last night, now word is DeMar DeRozan is expected to bolt via free agency. Mm. With the Stars gone and Pop retiring, will the Spurs be relegated to small market non-contender? Could have been a contender, I tell you, for the foreseeable future. The answer is yes. Don't overthink this.
Yeah, I mean, unless they just get so lucky, fall down in the lottery and end up getting number one pick, and then someone decides to go there and in free agency.
What's always pulled them out of their short-lived abysses have been, you know, incredible fortune with the draft lottery.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Tim Duncan, David Robinson.
Great point.
I mean, come on. That sets you up for basically 20 years of greatness there. So, and then obviously some great scouting and, you know, pulling guys like Ginobili and, you know, Avery Johnson, just Deshaun Elliott. Oh, I mean, he was pretty easy to identify coming out of Arizona. But you get the point. I think without Pop, it's going to be an appreciable step down on the bench. And they just aren't really that good. So, and nobody's going there as a free agent.
Mm-mm.
They could be on that train to Nowheresville for a little bit. Russ Westbrook continues his affection for triple-double prowess. Last night, 23 points, 14 rips, 15 dimes. Just listen to those numbers. 14 rebounds, 15 assists in a win over the Magic. So is the criticism that surrounds Westbrook, you know, the stat stuffer stuff, is that warranted?
Yeah, it's warranted, BT. Look, if Russell Westbrook, we know he can be a great scorer at the rim, right? And I know his athleticism is waning. But clearly what he's doing on a night in and night out basis, which is I'm going to get the, you know, whatever, double-digit points, and then I'm just going to assist. I'm going to crash the boards and, you know, try to, you know, run out in front of everybody on a fast break. It's not working. Like, he's got to try something different. And honestly, since they stink, just go be selfish if I'm Russell Westbrook. See if it makes a difference. Try to score 40. You know, instead of get my 20 and then, you know, get my triple-double. The triple-double means nothing anymore.
Nope.
And so the stat-stuffing nature of it, it's almost frustrating when you hear, oh, Russell, another triple-double. Who cares? Did you win? No. Did you score 40? Score 40 and have a triple-double. Then I'll be impressed.
Didn't move me at all. Doesn't move me at all. It is what it's so watered down. I'm so desensitized to the triple-double. It means literally nothing to me. You know, when Magic was doing it and Bird would rip one off, and then obviously LeBron really made it very popular. But, you know, Westbrook just took it to a nightly occurrence, which, again, is a credit to his individual talents, his, you know, his pure physical prowess. Even at age 30, whatever he is, 31 and 32, I don't know, whatever, he's still, I saw him throw down a dunk against the Knicks 2 weeks ago, off 2 feet. He looked like he was 23 years old taking off, like and his body still is tight.
That's right.
He's sculpted. He is like, in terms of like the athletic genes from God, he got touched by all 10 fingers. I always joke around, like, somebody like you probably got 9.
Mm-hmm.
I probably got 6. Santa probably got 2. Just kidding. Not really, actually. He probably did get 2. And, you know, D-Cell, I'm not really sure. I haven't seen him do much. Although, I'm going to say Mike got 3. I've seen Mike actually hit a wiffle ball. It's not bad. So that guy was given everything in the toolbox. He just has not won. So those stats are largely hollow. It is what it is. Nelson Cruz, he's 40, and he's still bombing. He's off to a hot start this season for the Twins. 3 homers, 7 ribbies in 6 games. I believe the Twins won again today, last I checked. Nelson is 53rd all-time. He has 420 home runs. Has Cruz turned into a Hall of Fame player, or does his PED suspension taint his career? That was back in 2013, by the way.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, I don't think it taints it, but it just makes you question, you know, some of the
authenticity.
Yeah, authenticity behind some of his production.
Especially that would be called tainting a TK.
Early in his career, but I don't want to say like. Because I think everybody was doing something to an extent.
Jeter wasn't.
True. Great point. But Jeter wasn't close to, you know, almost 450 home runs.
No, but he's got 3,500 hits, like fifth or sixth most in all-time history.
But home runs are different than hits.
All right. Are we playing tennis here?
Yeah. Back and forth. Like cameo.
Yep.
I don't think it taints his career, but I also don't think he's a Hall of Fame player.
He's not a Hall of Famer. I mean, he is a player who has really gone on to do some crazy stuff. And, you know, he's had a run going back to the mid-2010s, 40, 44, 43, 39, 30. I mean, and who knows what he would have done a year ago. He had 16 over the course of 53 games, so 8, 16, 24, 32, 40, 48. I mean, he's on pace at that point for another 40 home run season. And he's out of the chute incredibly hot so far. I mean, I think anybody who got pinched on any level is not getting into the Hall of Fame, and I never perceived him to be that type of player. But these numbers are, and he's a .280 career hitter. I mean, his numbers are pretty sick.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
All right, let's get a look here. Mickelson lining one up from the fairway. Justin Rose, by the way, setting the pace -6. Matsuyama -3. Phil rails back and crushes the wood. He's watching, waiting. As it drops over the water, did that make the water, folks? Mickelson's rinsing it. He got wet.
What's he sitting at right now?
It didn't show his score, but I can't believe that's going to help.
Yeah, no.
So,
not at all.
All right, brother.
Enjoy the drinking game for the rest of the Masters this Thursday evening.
BJ. Yes, yes. Imbibe away. Imbibe. Have a great night, everybody. Enjoy the Masters. We'll catch you tomorrow. Safe, sensible, and sane. Enjoy your Thursday, guys. We'll see you. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.